As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to the 3-0 Show, part of the Athletic Baseball Show family. Derek Van Riper, Bertiroli, Eno Saris here with you. It is Wednesday, March 9th. We're recording this just after noon Eastern. At this point, there is not yet an agreement on a new CBA, but I think we might be getting a little bit closer. It seems like significant progress has been made since the last time we spoke on this show about a week or so ago. The big issues, according to the Athletic's Evan Drellick, the direct draft pick compensation and the elimination of the qualifying offer, that's still a sticking point, as well as the league wanting to have an international draft, which obviously is a massive thing to sort out. A lot of implications there, but let's check the optimism meter. We begin with our resident pessimist, Britt Giroli. Britt, how are you feeling about the state of things right now?
You know what? I'm feeling good. I think a deal gets done today. I have a Florida trip already on the books for next week. And yeah, that's it. That's all I got on it.
Wow. Wow. You booked the trip already. All right.
I booked it weeks ago. Just thinking that I'd have something to do.
Well, I'm trying to decide when to go to Arizona, and I haven't booked it yet.
Yeah. Weren't you just there? You were just there a few weeks ago. Oh, I thought you were there.
That was fall league. But...
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah.
So I agree. I'm the resident optimist, I guess. I think it's good. I think there's a little cynicism in my optimism, which is that, you know, the international draft, I don't think will be a big holdup because the MLBPA, the Major League Baseball professionals, you know, they don't cover, that union does not cover, you know, international players that are drafted in the international draft. You know, they only cover them once they become a pro. So, you know, it's not necessarily their primary concern. Also, you know, I do think there's a ton of corruption. There's a great story by Maria Torres and Ken Rosenthal about this. There's a ton of corruption where, you know, they're making deals with 12-year-olds, you know, in Latin America. That's awful. I don't like that. I don't want, you know, 12-year-olds to be scouted. I don't want them to be making deals. Do they have the full, you know, capacity to make these deals? And then they get screwed if the team decides they don't want to actually, you know, come through on that deal, then the player just gets screwed and there's no recompense. So a draft could fix some of those things. I do think that it will probably limit spending because that's how the draft has worked for American kids. And it'll limit spending maybe even more than the draft pools do. But, you know, if it helps with the corruption, and it's not necessarily something that the union's all over, I think that it's an easy chip for them. So if they give that chip and they get rid of draft pick compensation and the qualifying offer, I think they will make that deal.
Seems a little messed up that the thing that the Players Association can give the league is something that they don't really have any control over anyway. And it's a broken system. I think the piece that Maria and Ken wrote, we'll put a link to it in the show notes. It highlights that even with an international draft, those problems aren't going to go away. They detail how and why that's the case. I think it all leads to even smaller minor league systems. We talked about that on the show either a week or two ago. There has to be a reason why the league wants this. The reason is to curtail spending even further. And I think an international draft ultimately gets them to that point. So the question I would have is, how quickly do they think they can implement something like that? It would take at least a few years to have an actual structure in place that would make sense, that to outline all the rules. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe because MLB has wanted this for a long time, that they actually have some version of a detailed plan ready to go. They've already thought about the how, when, and why. Even if they haven't done it in great detail, they've done enough to just push ahead and make it happen. But some of the other things that we've seen, bigger bases are coming. And I like that a lot. I think bigger bases are a great thing. It makes the game safer, first and foremost. Increases the possibilities. Yeah, especially at first base, but double plays out at second base. I just think that's a spot where you can see a lot of potential injuries out there. Making the bases bigger, though, increases infield hits slightly. I don't care as much about that. It's the stolen base, the impact on stolen bases. Getting teams to be a little more aggressive in that area, to me, is good for the game. It makes the game more fun. It adds another strategy element that is starting to fade away if you look at the trends of stolen bases over the past 20 years. So I'm curious, Britt, how do you feel about that adjustment as one of the on-field things that has bubbled up in recent days?
Yeah, I like it. I feel like once it gets done, we're going to have so much to dissect with all the rules and everything, but I'm in favor of right now just getting a deal done. I think bigger bases, whatever you got to do with the pitch clock, like the shift, I'm in favor of all of it. Just get a deal done. That's kind of where I'm at right now, guys. I think as most people probably listening to this podcast are, I'm like labored out. I'm tired of hearing about these incremental adjustments. Hopefully by the time this podcast is out, this is already old news and we already have a new CBA and we spend the next couple of weeks dissecting all the new rules and all the spring excitement. That's where I'm at.
Well, I just had a super cynical thought that popped into my head, and I'd like to apologize if I had any part in this, but I'm now thinking back to the sticky stuff enforcement, which I definitely, you know, had some part in breaking that story. But you remember how he just the commissioner just decided to implement the enforcement in the middle of the season, and we all thought that was really strange.
That was strange.
Well, I'm going to disagree. He had to implement it in the middle of the season because so many people in the media were pressuring him to do it. Ken Rosenthal and I wrote a big article about it, and like they couldn't have let that continue the whole year the way it was going. So it was strange he implemented it midseason, except he kind of had to because of the mounting media pressure. If you guys recall, players were speaking out.
We wrote pieces together. I've been writing about it forever. So like, yes, I guess there was mounting media pressure, but he's also ignored mounting media pressure, and he also gave them memos before the season for like two or three seasons in a row saying we're going to do something this season, right? And then didn't do anything. So he could have done it before the season. My point is that now, looking back in the light of like him asking for more power in terms of implementing rule changes in the CBA, you know, doing this mid-season enforcement, it kind of makes you feel like, well, he can do whatever he wants anyway.
Well, that's because that was when you look at the rules that he's allowed to implement, the baseball is controlled by MLB. We've written this. Like, he can't just make random rules up. The baseball is controlled by MLB, as we've written about. So that was within his purview to change it with no input from players.
Right.
But all these other things.
And sticky stuff enforcement, he'd already followed the memo. Like, he'd done, like, he did the chain of thing where he'd, like, did the memo. Yes. I told you guys about it, and this is enforcement of an existing rule in the book, and so I can do this. Yes. However, I do think that like doing it in the middle of the season kind of was like a power play in a way. Like that's how I see it now, especially now that he wants more, you know, ability to make rule changes, and without the players' input. So,
well, the players are going to give input, though. The sticky stuff is an isolated thing, I think. I see what you're saying, except the players literally had no input in that because they have no input in the baseball. That's not changing with this CBA.
It was just an enforcement of existing rules.
But to change other things now, they're shortening the time, but the players still have input. So Manfred can't wake up one day in June and say, we're changing the the base pass. We're moving the mound back. Like
the players have
input. Yes, the players have input. So I see what you're saying, except I think the sticky stuff was so isolated because it was never enforced and it involved the baseball.
That makes me feel better, but I would hate to have been a pawn in this whole thing. But, you know, I also think that it's one of those things that can get slipped in where they're so concerned about, you know, moving the CBT. The three big things for the players are minimum salary, the bonus pool, and moving the CBT. They're so concerned with those things that they will give the international draft and they will give the commissioner more powers to change the rules, I think, because the main concern is sort of, I think it's clawing back what are perceived losses in the last couple of CBAs. So finances were number one. And it's actually kind of interesting to think back that some of the narrative was they lost in previous CBAs because they were too concerned with these little things about getting a chef in every, you know, getting a chef in everything and the per diems or what happens in spring training and stuff like that. So, you know, it is interesting that this time they're like, okay, screw all that little stuff. We don't care. International draft, fine. You have it. We don't care. All we want is higher CBT. And that's why we're all a little bit optimistic because they finally moved on the CBT and they kind of moved pretty close to the midpoint. So that's why I think we all think something's going to happen now.
Yeah. Well, the international draft, it looks like, Derek, somebody said won't be ready till 2024.
Okay.
So because they can't just jump into it. Yeah.
Couple years.
They have to let all those 12-year-olds come through the system they've already made agreements with.
The thing that bothers me, though, and Maria and Ken got into this, is MLB points to like, oh, we can clean up the international side. Yeah, they can. But they've also turned a blind eye to the international side of stuff forever. They could have already cleaned it up. Yeah. They just don't care. But they only care now because it could save them money, obviously, because there will no longer be bidding wars. So I do think, Derek, you asked what the holdup is, and you're forgetting how many players that are prominent players are international players. There could be a lot of opposition in the players union to that.
Only one on the executive subcommittee, though.
Right. Yes. I think that's where there's not the representation and leadership considering this issue from the perspective of the people that have lived this baseball life. That's where I think it starts to fall apart. I mean, I think we talked about this again probably 2 or 3 weeks ago. If you look at the top players in baseball, the number of them that were not part of the MLB draft is surprising. And when you start looking at bonuses and the money those players received compared to their peers who were first and second round draft picks in the States, there's a pretty significant gap favoring the players that came through the MLB draft. So on the surface, I think you can be deceived to think, oh, an international draft, that's going to be more fair. Instead of guys getting $10,000 signing bonuses and $50,000 signing bonuses from the Dominican Republic, they're going to end up getting something more like a first round pick. And that's good. But a lot of those players, those top end players, are getting giant signing bonuses compared to the smaller signing bonuses of their peers already because of the system being the mess that it is. So all this is to say, like, don't look at the international draft, if that in fact does come to fruition, and say, oh, this solved the problem. It isn't necessarily solving the problem at all. It could actually be just as bad as it's always been. But we should be 2 weeks into spring training games, right? This should be like the second week of Cactus League and Grapefruit League play. It is not, of course, but Britt, you were on the road recently. You were in Arizona and you got to see the MLBPA camp that is set up in Arizona. So I'm curious to know what is happening there as players continue to go through their own version of spring training.
It's awesome, guys. If I were to tell someone who wasn't familiar with baseball that this was just all the Giants camp or all the A's camp, you would believe it because it directly replicates a spring training. They've got guys doing infield and outfield and stations. They've got BP. They've got guys throwing bullpen sessions. Yesterday was the first day that pitchers threw live BP, guys who wanted to. They have a state-of-the-art weight room. They have catered food. So it basically is spring training. You're just getting a hodgepodge of players, probably about 40 to 50 guys, maybe even more now later in the week are expected, that come from, you know, a dozen or so teams that are able to work out there. It's really cool to see. What's kind of funny about it is it's in Mesa, Arizona, Bell Bank Park. It's also a big Little League youth tournament. So I don't know if you guys saw last week, Zach Greinke was throwing a bullpen and a bunch of Little Leaguers were watching him. like right outside of the like flagged area, which is hilarious. And, you know, a lot of players when I was there earlier this week were stopping and signing for the families and the little leaguers. And obviously it's not ideal. Everyone wants the lockout to end. But I was surprised with one, how state of the art the facility is, and two, with how many big leaguers were actually utilizing it. Because I guess because it is so nice, and because when else do you have the opportunity to work out with that many guys? You know, Mitch Haniger was saying he was kind of floating around in different areas. Another player I talked to said throwing alone kind of sucks. So I think having that camaraderie while they wait out this lockout has been kind of an underrated aspect of all this as well.
Yeah, there's a couple things I really like about it. It seems to create solidarity in the players union, I think. You know, you get to know more players that aren't just on your team. And the other thing that's kind of interesting is I've seen hand in hand with like what the union seems to be doing right now on their Twitter feed. I don't know if you guys have noticed. They're trying to tell stories of these players. And so there's kind of this ability. It's a little bit like the Players Tribune or something where, you know, like kind of trying to get stories from the players out, you know, directly. I don't know exactly how I feel about that as a journalist, considering that's partially my job. But I did like there was a video about David Hess coming back from cancer. That was pretty uplifting. I forget. There was another video that I enjoyed. So, you know, there's this opportunity here to create solidarity in the union and also show the players off show them doing something and get some of their stories directly to the fans without the benefit of stadiums and laundry and, you know, so on and so forth, TV deals.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, I remember reading the story, I think, when Adam Ottavino first set up his own throwing facility.
That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Lindsay Adler had a story about it. Was that 2 years ago now? I honestly don't know how far back in time anything has happened anymore. I've just completely lost all sense of that. And they had the Players Association had a video, like an 8-minute video, just showing the guys that were throwing there. There's probably, I don't know, 8 or 10 different big leaguers that were throwing in the clip. And it was funny because it's such a no-frills facility. You know, there's the mound built up. There was a bunch of stuff from Amazon, like tarps blocking the back window so that way the catcher could see
cement
the
wall for your plyo balls.
Yeah, there was a cutout in the wall that you had to go through to then go downstairs to a shared restroom. And it was not like the facilities like Driveline and Tread and some of the other facilities we've talked about. This was very much a cookie cutter sort of thing. Like, I just need a place to throw and I'm going to share this with other people. So you could definitely see that camaraderie just in a 7-minute video. And a lot of the younger players being very grateful to Adam Ottavino for just having this space that he was willing to share with them. Because if you haven't had a free agent contract, finding a facility of any kind, especially one with some tech, he had TrackMan set up at least, that's very difficult. And it's very cost prohibitive, as we've talked about in the past. So the camp in Arizona, I think it's just funny, Britt, because there's this idea. Some people have this belief that players wouldn't know what to do if they didn't have spring training. And I don't think that's really the case.
They didn't have people to tell them what to do.
Like, they kind of know what they need to do to be prepared for the season. I know people are worried if we get an agreement and a quick run up and we still try to get 162 games in, thanks to, you know, a couple doubleheaders sprinkled into the schedule, that we might have a lot of injuries again. I think players are generally closer to being where they would ordinarily be at this point than the broader public thinks. So I guess I don't have as many concerns as most people do. I mean, do you think there's a faction of players, though, that are still stuck, that are unable to prepare on their own? We saw Yoan Ramirez, right? You know, brought him up on the pod a couple weeks ago, throwing at a park on his own. Like, that's not quite the same as being in the facility like you described in Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah. The guys who aren't in Mesa, obviously, not going to have a setup like that. Not going to be able to hit off big league pitching and, you know, take infield with other big leaguers. I think the rehabbers are far behind. You heard Lance McCullers in Houston say this winter his rehab has been behind because he wasn't able to get in touch with the team's trainers, because he wasn't able to follow their specific protocol. And, you know, that's a guy who has a lot of money and resources at his disposal. So you wonder, you know, the other tiers down, how much it affects those guys, the guys who just got added to the 40-man. Now, Cleveland did have four or five guys in Mesa's camp, and they added, I want to say, 10 guys to their 40-man roster. But people who aren't as lucky to be in Arizona, if you just get added to this big league roster and you don't have the money to work out at these places, I think you can't possibly replicate spring training. You're just behind the eight ball. So there is definitely concern. And I think even if a deal gets reached as we speak here on Wednesday, there's still going to be heightened injury risk throughout the sport for quite some time, because we're going to get a rushed spring training pretty much no matter what.
Frustrating.
I think we'll also find probably that the hitters may be a little bit behind the pitchers. Is that possible? I don't know. Yeah. That's what we found in 2020 when they tried to come back fast. The hitters were actually behind the pitchers, and they were acting as if it was still, you know, late March when they were still playing in August, when they started playing in August. So
yeah,
we kind of all focus on pitchers, you know, not necessarily maybe having five or six innings. But I think it actually might be the hitters that are a little bit behind with the way this works. But, you know, how can they mimic it? You know, I think the live ABs are actually super important, because you get that adrenaline rush. You don't get that over the off season when you're thrown into a tire swing. Like, you have to have somebody, you have to have that, you know, that mano-a-mano, you know, didn't mean to be gendered, but just like, you have to have that kind of like, you know, me against you, like adrenaline, mm-hmm. to kind of hit those maximum velos and get that feeling of competition. So I think the live ABs are important. Was there any talk at the camp of doing some sort of games or trying to mimic game situations?
Yeah, if it goes far enough, obviously in the lockout, there is talk of, you know, some kind of scrimmages, sim games, things like that are going to get escalated. They're also going to grow. I mean, if this agreement doesn't get reached today, if it goes through the end of the week and next week, you're going to see more and more players, I think, show up at this camp, because it is the closest thing to spring training. Mm-hmm. And so there were talks about, like, you know, we're going to escalate this if we have to, right? Everything's kind of in limbo right now as we sit here, even this podcast. Like, is this going to be relevant here in a few hours? We hope so. Or are people going to be making plans? Is Carlos Correa going to sign tonight, right? Like, this could be a wild day. Yeah. Think about that for a second. But we really have no idea.
I have wondered, you know, if this does go on for even a couple more weeks, if there are ways that the players breaking up into their own teams are going to try and show us some baseball on their own. Like, how could they go about that? And we're brainstorming on this, because I think even just a couple of days ago, it seemed like the delay was going to be a lot longer than it seems like it's going to be right now. And one of the ideas we had was that you could have regular spring training looking games, but you have these captains that just draft the teams the day of. And, you know, maybe you have a schedule for who's going to pitch that day, and each team gets an equal number of pitchers and the workload sort of just planned out ahead of time. But if you stream that somewhere and you actually stream the game, maybe you had players mic'd up, you had GoPros on players, you'd get an experience for spring training that's actually a lot more interesting and a lot closer to the field than what we're accustomed to seeing, you know, on a typical Wednesday afternoon in March. Look, I think spring training baseball is great background fodder, but to see something that more resembles, I don't know, like an all-star game sort of showcase, like to see Sandlot. That version of spring training, or like the Sandlot vibes, that would actually be a really interesting thing to see if we don't have some kind of agreement in place.
Yeah, I think it would be a step beyond, like, you know, the other thing is just live ABs where you're like, oh, this person against this person. But, you know, that doesn't really survive all the way down to like, oh, like the 60th best batter against the 45th best pitcher. But if you get a little bit of buy-in with the captain, you're like, oh, Team Lindor against, you know, Team Correa or whatever, then like you get some rivalry, you get some talking, and then people feel like you have the whole thing is how do you mimic teams in baseball? How do you mimic the team feeling without the laundry, without the team, without the logo, you know, like how do you mimic that? And I do think the captain thing kind of works that way, because now you're like kind of rooting for Team Lindor. You're like, I always like Lindor better than Correa, you know, or whatever it is. And they've captured that in basketball a little bit. You know, you got the Team LeBron versus Team, you know, Team Durant and stuff like that. And that's how they've done their All-Star game. And in fact, doing this now, I think would be kind of an interesting dry run for the All-Star game. Cause I think the baseball All-Star game could be different. I think there could be things that they could do differently.
I want to see like a skills competition that is more interesting. We've seen it. I think it's the NPB in Japan that has the hitting targets all around the infield. They have a bunting contest, which is one of the only ways to make bunting interesting, is to take it out of an actual baseball game and then just make it like a backyard precision game. I think being creative and adding things that are as fun as the new format Home Run Derby, that should be part of the goal. And maybe this is a place to workshop that. Like if you have hitters that are competing even in batting practice in spring training, being behind the cage, watching that and getting commentary from a few players, that might actually be pretty entertaining as well. So I hope we get a couple things like that along the way if we remain in this holding pattern. We were also wondering, you know, if this goes on for a few weeks, do you get to the point where groups of players start barnstorming? Do they start going around and just playing other places? Is that an actual possibility at some point? To me, that's more of a May June kind of thing rather than a March April kind of thing, but that could be one way to just take the show on the road.
Yeah, I really hope it doesn't come to that as much as I want to see that kind of thing, right? I think that means that we don't have real baseball still. Yeah, right. And I think all of us are like kind of hoping that this podcast is in fact dated in a few hours and we can talk about rule changes and crazy signings and everything going on, as cool as it would be to see. And maybe that's something that guys consider doing in the winter or something, because it would be awesome to see. I was joking around in Arizona, even just putting a camera, like mounting a GoPro on the back of one of the fields, people would literally watch that. I think they just are clamoring to see some kind of baseball, especially now in spring training. I think it's one of the most interesting times of the year because it's not on TV a lot and fans just want to know what's going on. So giving them anything I think would really help. But again, if they do agree today, we're talking about they probably report this weekend. Spring training could feasibly start this weekend if they agreed on a deal today.
That's crazy to me. I thought they would bake in a week or two, but at this point, they don't have that week too. If they want to do 162 game season, they got to have like a 3 week spring training that starts on Friday.
It's also going to present a lot of visa issues for players that haven't come back yet. That's a problem every spring anyway on a normal
schedule. I bet you there's a fair amount of those in Mesa, like at the park, you know, because they probably had to just follow their normal routine and just come here. And I wonder if you can get a sponsorship for a visa if MLB is not allowed to talk about you.
I wonder if there's a loophole with PA. So say they agree today, it's the 9th. I bet they report on maybe the 12th. That gives you 1, 2, really 3 weeks. The season would start maybe a couple days later. I'm looking at like that April 2nd, April 3rd. But that's really not bad at all. You can squeeze doubleheaders in. You can eliminate off days, right? And you still get the 3 week of spring training, which is it enough? I don't know, but
it'd be interesting to also have an expanded playoffs on the back end to have to deal with.
Yeah, exactly. Though at least they're talking about 12 teams, not 14, because I personally hate the 14. There is like baseball newsy stuff today, though. Did you guys see the Rockies fired Scott Van Lenten, who was their R&D director?
So now you know I was looking at my phone. Yeah, I was. Yeah. I
got a bunch of texts about it because he came from the Nats.
Yeah, we're working on that story. There is a lot more to that story.
I was hoping that there was a lot more to that story.
There's a lot more to that story because you don't normally hire a guy and then 4 or 5 months later fire a guy. The Rockies don't normally fire guys at all. It's mostly just leaving. And so I can't really say more until we know more, but it's very complicated and it's going to get messy and it's not just a firing. So there's something weird happened there. Hopefully we'll have more news. Yeah, I heard about it last night and you know, their director of baseball ops left to start a pizza startup.
That's, I like pizza, but wow.
Well, maybe you would like pizza better than working for the Rockies is what we're hearing.
So well, their R&D department only has 5 employees.
Yes.
Most of them hired by this guy. So how many of them will now leave?
That's true. Wonder. Especially since I think it's an acrimonious parting.
It says the Denver Post says that it's, quote, major disagreements between him and the club about what his role would be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you don't hire someone and then 6 months later you fire him and it's like ever a good scenario.
So now I'm leaving the sourcing behind, but we do know from Rocky's history. So I want to be clear, like this part is not sourced. This is more speculation. What we do know from Rocky's history is that their entire R&D department left, you know, last year or over the last 2 years. There was a sense that they weren't being listened to.
Hard to believe that would happen. The other Rockies thing I saw, which was actually kind of relevant to players training on their own, it was not our friend Nick Groke, but one of his competitors, Patrick Saunders from the Denver Post, who had this tweet. He asked Rockies GM Bill Schmidt if he thinks players will report to camp in shape if the lockout ends. And the answer, which I don't know the tone of the answer, Bill Schmidt's answer was, what they think might be in shape and what's baseball shape might be two different things. And the tone that you read that in is entirely up to you. If he wasn't kind of chuckling as he said it, that is a ridiculous thing to say about professional baseball players. Like, that is very insulting to them. So I tend to think of this organization as backward and stuck in like the 90s. So I took it to be him actually being critical of the players. I would love to know if he was actually just playing around, but I just never get that vibe from them. So yes, I would rather work for a pizza startup than the Colorado Rockies too.
I find that quote really interesting too, from another perspective, that Britt and I were, I don't know if we'll write it, maybe we'll do it next year, but getting late in the spring, but we were going to write about how pitchers basically don't stop throwing anymore. They might take a week off, but they throw year round now. And I would say the same is true for position players. They might go for a weekend in Cabo and then they're right back on it when they get back. I mean, there's you know, I don't think there's this idea anymore that, you know, incremental sort of daily training is going to tire you out. It's more a sense of like, you need to keep that up. And I've noticed that myself in my running training. You know, if I run on Friday and I don't run till Monday, I've lost fitness over the weekend. Like, I literally can notice over 2 days that I've lost fitness compared to when I run Monday and then I run one run Wednesday and I run Friday. Like, I feel more fit on those runs than on the Monday one because I took 2 days off. So I think that there's a sense now of like, I talk about acute and chronic, where it's like, the chronic is building up. You want to build up a really strong base so that you're really athletic on a daily basis. And then the acute stress is the day game, the game day stuff, where you throw your hardest and you run your hardest. But you can only do that. Like, just think about me. Like, what if I tried to, Julian McWilliams, not to throw him under the bus, but Julian McWilliams did a thing with me where we were like running and hitting in front of the cameras. He blew out his quad when we tried to run to first. He blew out his quad and he said, yeah, man, I haven't been running. Well, that's what happens with the acute and chronic. It's like, if you don't get your athleticism up to a certain base level, when you then try to do the acute stress where throw a 90 mile an hour fastball, but haven't been throwing all year, you know, I haven't thrown for 3 months, or run to first base a sprint when I haven't been running in 2 weeks. That's when you really hurt yourself. So, you know, they basically want to keep this really high level of athleticism up. So I think he's wrong, because I think that they're in very close to baseball shape all year.
Yeah. And I honestly think, you know, if spring training starts, that will be a big issue, is can these guys get ready in time? So maybe we actually can use our story when camps open, like the first few days, and not completely throw it away. But yeah, it's, you know, you guys have learned that the worst thing they can do is allow it to rest and allow things to build up, whether that's scar tissue, whether that's, you know, just loss of muscle mass. Guys throw every day, and it's not throwing a baseball every day. They may throw a football. They may throw, you know, Max Scherzer, yeah, throw against a wall a little bit, like a tennis ball, stuff like that. But just to condition your arm, just to keep everything going, kind of like keep that joint like lubricated. It's like if you don't start your car for a week or two in the winter, right?
It's kind of that same thing. My car's died over COVID.
Yeah. It's kind of that same thing. So it is interesting. I do think 3 weeks, pitchers can be ready, because pitchers are throwing already, especially if you're already throwing live BPs and you're in some of these scenarios. Yes, you can be ready. Maybe early on, we'll see a lot of shorter starts in the first week or two of the season, but you're already knowing that hitters may be significantly behind because they're not getting those. I think it's 30 plate appearances is usually what veteran guys kind of say is the target for spring. Now, can they get that? Sure. But I think, you know, they're going to be a little bit more behind the eight ball than pitchers, just by the very nature of the condensed spring training. They're not going to be able to go from zero to playing every day, nine inning games, right? They have to build their way up. Whereas pitchers are a little bit more on that schedule, and they're going to go the 3 innings, the 4 innings, the 5 innings, and still be able to, in 3 weeks, get what? Four starts probably as a starter. 3 weeks is 21 days. You get 5 starts. So you could go, right? 3 innings, 4 innings, 5 innings, 6. You could build all the way up in 3 weeks as a starting pitcher.
I think they can make it, yeah.
I think you just give position players more reps in game. Like, I think they drag that out a little bit to keep guys from being tired later.
Instead of leaving in
later,
like the fifth, like the eighth or something.
Some of the players that are not going to be on the big league roster.
Especially
anytime soon.
Especially the minor ones that are already in minor league camp. Like, maybe don't bring over as many.
I think that's what they're going to do, just to make sure that the players that need those extra reps get those extra reps, and then they're not as far behind with timing at the plate as they would be if you followed the usual spring training plan.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is a pretty interesting thing that also came out on Tuesday, and I wonder if this had anything to do with progress being made in negotiations toward the new CBA. Apple TV has a deal with Major League Baseball to broadcast 2 games every Friday throughout the regular season. It's called Friday Night Baseball. They dug deep for a new creative name there, but no, what else are you going to call it? Ultimately, it's interesting because the games will only be available. It's an exclusive deal, but they will not have blackout restrictions. So, for example, if you live in Chicago and the Cubs are going to be on Apple TV, it's not going to be a case where you can't watch them. You just have to have the Apple TV app on one of your devices. You don't need a subscription. So it's sort of like the YouTube games, I think, is basically what you're looking at. It's just on another app. It's just putting programming in another place. I don't know if this agreement was just a kind of a embarrassing little moment for the league. Oh, we don't have any money. And then like a deal with Apple fell out of their pockets while they were walking to negotiate. But ultimately, I think it's good because it reaches people who might not see baseball on their current TV packages or might even think about baseball. It's putting the game in a different spot. Of course, it's there to generate money for the league. It grows the pie. And whether or not the players get enough of that pie, that is the agreement. That's the fight that is on hand right now. So all this is to say, I was actually kind of excited about this. I know that a lot of the public reaction was negative. Oh, it's another place where baseball is going to go. Oh, I'm not going to get those games on my RSN. I don't think it's going to be that hard to watch these games. They're also going to bring the big inning show. So if you watched MLB TV and happened to see this in 2021, it's a fly around show, kind of like Red Zone for football, if you're familiar with that. Different because it's baseball. So every weeknight, they're going to have that on the Apple TV package as well. I think getting more eyes on the game is always a good thing. And I don't think taking two games a week and putting it on a new platform is damaging to the existing audience. Is there something I'm missing in this that actually makes it a bad thing as far as getting people to watch baseball?
I have one thing. I was talking to Maury Brown about this. He pointed out that those games will not be on MLB TV. So you won't be able to watch them on your streaming service. He said that affected about 2% of the available games on MLB TV, which is, it's not a lot. It's not zero. The one thing that I think ties into my cynicism about sort of the state of capitalism or the state of sort of our, you know, our current system, economic system, is that this sort of chase for growth often leaves behind existing customers. So the idea is, you know, new eyes, new eyeballs are going after them. And well, what about the person who likes to watch every single Cubs game?
That's the thing the league knows. The league knows that the diehard who wants to watch all 162 games will go here, there, and everywhere to do it. Like they know that. They have you. They have you hooked. You are on the hook.
Is it free on Apple Plus?
You are not leaving. It's free. It is, the games are not, it's not part of their pay model. It's not like you have to pay same as like Ted Lasso.
It's not.
It's based on their press release. They said it's free.
So then what's in it for Apple TV? They think people will sign
more
up.
Content. You will go watch your favorite baseball team there, and then they can hit you with Ted Lasso commercials, and then you pay for Apple TV or you buy iCloud or their other products. I mean, they've
plus it's like all those streaming services, very few of them have sports.
Right.
So I think there is a little bit of a race now between each of them to be like, who's going to win and have some sort of sports presence. That's when I don't think of Netflix when I think of sports. You know, I don't think of, you know, Peacock when I think of sports. I think of movies. Basically, I think of movies and maybe some, you know, on-demand shows. So maybe one of them can kind of win a little bit of a race to also be like a place you can. I think YouTube is trying to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, YouTube was kind of first there. Do you think there are people that just see the world through one of these streaming services? This is something I think does exist for kids in YouTube. Like,
yeah,
I think there are kids that basically the only TV they watch is YouTube.
Yes.
100%. Yes. I think there are a lot of people who are.
But us adults, we just have 8 million streaming services and we just watch. We just we don't have no idea which one to watch and where it is. And
if you're older than 30, you've dealt with you were a young adult at a time where you had to have cable to watch stuff, right? If you wanted to watch sports, you had a cable bundle, and then you've made the switch to these a la carte things, and all these a la carte things are probably going to cost you more than the cable bundles used to cost you. So, hey, congratulations. You took the long road to paying more. Who'd have thunk it, right? I think this is important because it's going to reach people that just don't have access to watch baseball currently, or they don't even think about baseball. That's a good thing. That's definitely a good thing. Obviously, it's to make money for the league. The problem I have, here's the thing that bothers me about this deal. MLB is going to produce the games. It's not going to be new production. It's not going to be new voices and new faces presenting the game. It's going to be just like the games.
Are they even producing the fly around show too?
I think they're still producing that because they produced it on their app last year. And they need to make changes. And we don't know who these people are. Maybe they're adding to their crew. But if it's the usual Bob Costas or Matt Vasgersian or the same people that have been calling games, big games for the last 10 or 20 years, I don't think that's necessarily the best product. It's not because I don't like those people, but I think you need to keep bringing new voices in. If this is to get new eyes and ears on the game, try presenting it in a different way. Because everybody who sees what's already happening might actually like an alternative better. This seems like a great way to experiment and to change some things about how we watch baseball. And the thing in the press release that bothered me the most was actually just the fact that MLB is going to produce the games. Because I immediately pictured a booth where it's Bob Costas and Jim Cott. And I've heard them call enough games. This is no disrespect to them. I don't need to hear them anymore. I want to hear new voices. Elevate some of the up-and-coming people that cover teams on a day-to-day basis. And then when they are covering a national game, or the number two people move up.
Out of that pool. Like, remember when DAZN had a baseball show and they put the Cespedes barbecue guys on it?
Try something different, please. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that they're going to use some team people for some of these games. But the issue is like, they're doing the same thing Amazon does. Amazon uses NBC people for their football because they don't have a built-out studio. They don't have the built-out people, right? So they're going to lean on the network. And, you know, I think the concern there is, yeah, the network uses their same people and then maybe throws a team broadcaster in there. But you're still not getting anything new. You're still not doing anything different, right? And I don't see the network, which is really down in viewership from what I've heard, less than half of what it used to be. I just don't see them kind of adding more people at this point in time. I see it being
How much budget, how many resources do they have? They're not out there looking.
It's like their YouTube games. Like, yeah, they used, I would say, 3 out of the 4 people were network people, and then they maybe had somebody from a team, right? So it was like the YouTube games, which were fine, but it's, you know, nothing super exciting. You're right. They need to be
the most innovative thing about the YouTube games was the ability to chat like on the game.
Right. Which, you know, you can just hide that if you're not into that. But if you want to see what people are talking about, what they're excited about, it's nice to take the temperature of the room. I think it's a way to do it.
Better than like looking away from the screen and looking at your Twitter and then looking back and like it's right there at least.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to sit here and reel off my list of wonderful ideas, but I just think this, that's a paid job. It's not my job to tell a company with limitless money how to make it better. Like they want to know. I'm easy to find.
I don't know if the network has limitless money. I mean, the league probably does.
No, Apple has limitless money. Apple doesn't need the old wooden ship to make decisions for them, and they probably won't do it for long, right? Apple and Amazon are going to be the future of streaming sports. That to me seems very obvious.
You think that's true?
Direction we're going. Yeah.
I would say like if any brand, YouTube is the only one I'd bring up, but. You know, if those are ahead, I'm a little surprised that Peacock did this like kind of $30 million toe in the water, which is, I don't know. It's like either do it or don't, dude. Like, what? Anyway.
Well, Apple also wants the NFL. So I agree. I think Apple is in on it. I also think Amazon too, but I think it's going to take 2-3 years before you see them build out studios and hire people
and
specifically for those roles
own.
And have control of their own, right? Yeah.
That's what they're going to do. You know, they're going to have their own people eventually.
I think that yes, and I think that like the issue with the network is, you know, we've seen that they really just gravitate towards a certain type of person, and obviously. I don't think anybody at The Athletic is their favorite people. So I don't think anybody on this show
We're
is
not
high
on the
on
list.
Anyone's list. We're definitely not on the list. And so I think, you know, you're really kind of cutting off your nose to spite your face when you're kind of looking editorially at like, what do we want and how do we get personalities into this game? But you're also, from the network perspective, trying to control everything that is said and done. You're just going to end up with a watered down product. You know, whether the game is good or not, I think. Like Derek said, that show has the potential to be great, but how come every other show they've done has more or less fallen flat? It's because they keep recycling the same people and expecting things to change.
I also just wonder if people consume baseball differently than other sports a little bit. I don't know. Like, is it just me or does it like, my appraisal is that there aren't as many people that will just watch a random baseball game as there are people that will watch a random football game.
Well, that's there's a huge difference. That's
there's more baseball fans that will only want to watch their team.
Yes, I think that's generally true. I think if you are,
but that has ramifications for
fan, like whether you still or not watch Sunday Night Football, even if those teams aren't playing.
Right. And you know, there's a lot of baseball fans who are like, I don't care, you know, what the other teams are doing. But I think that has ramifications for what we're talking about here, because Apple, you know, no matter what Apple and Amazon and all of them do, they're not going to they're probably not going to own the rights. They're not going to own MLB TV. They're not going to have every game. So they're just going to, and they're not going to have the local game. They're just going to have these national games of the week. And so baseball, I think, is trying to sell Mondays, Tuesdays, as you've seen, like each of these deals is for like a night. Friday, the Apple bought Friday, you know? And so they're going to try and do this. And so every streaming service is going to have one night of baseball and it'll just be some random games. Do you think that's like a real strategy?
I don't think it's great. I think it's a business. It's good for bringing in money because you're selling rights to all these new people that weren't previously paying you, and you're maybe getting out of some of your RSN troubles that you were having by going to someone with deeper pockets. So I understand why they're doing it that way. I don't know if it's the most effective way to present the product as a whole. That's the main concern that I have. And I wonder if we're going to look back at this deal and say the best part of it was the beginning. Because let's just say that Apple ends up with Red Zone, or if that's a model that other sports want to follow and they end up getting it for a different sport, maybe that's the presentation that works for a lot more people. Maybe fly around coverage done the right way is the
bettors,
way you say, what's going on? What's going on a Wednesday night?
Well,
right,
bettors, fantasy people. And then like I just read that our attention span in the iPhone era went from 12 seconds to 8 seconds. So
huge. I believe it.
That makes sense. I mean, I think that there's potential for that show, but they've had shows before. What was that show they had? The Beginning?
Beginning is what they had prior, like they just had, but then they had Strike Zone channel was kind of like their first attempt to replicate Red Zone. And I think the key to this is the part that I think everyone can see, and Eno was getting at this. The casual baseball fan, even a pretty hardcore baseball fan, is different than fans of other sports. The single person Scott Hansen get really excited about a third quarter touchdown energy that doesn't quite work with a fourth inning strikeout with the bases loaded. It's just one person cannot carry that show. I just don't believe that. I know it's cost effective to only have one person instead of two or three, but you need to build an entertaining and energetic crew that also is likable to the point where they can get whatever guests they want to get on who are relevant that day. Because I think what is different for most baseball fans compared to a lot of football fans is the desire for extra information. Baseball is like a more information-driven sport.
Deep divers.
You need to present that information in an engaging and fun and approachable way. It is a very fine line to walk, especially with sports betting being a bigger part of programming going forward. Like it or not, it's here to stay, and we're only scratching the surface of how much you're going to see about betting when you watch sports.
Yeah, I agree. You need more than one person. You also need to make it lively and fun, and it's hard to do that if you have one person reading the highlights alone, which you need to maybe mix up who's on the show too. Like have like one or two standbys, and then depending on what happened last night, get a reporter to come in virtually on Zoom or you know what I mean? Like something.
Treat it like a news show, like treat it like a real show.
Yeah. Remains to be seen, but that's kind of how I would do it. So people are getting like, oh, I want to tune in because not only is it, you know, exciting, but it's up to the minute stuff, right? It's someone who was at the game, someone who listened to the manager, someone who whatever talked to the player. I think that adds an extra element. But maybe I'm overstating our importance.
Well, I'm a little worried that it'll end up being more like, you know, algorithmic jump arounds where they know that the most bets were on the parlay for Harper to hit two home runs, and he's hit one on home run. So now we're going to go. We're going to jump in here to live coverage of Bryce Harper trying to hit a second home run and make X million dollars for, or even the high bettors. We got a high bettor who put $2 million on this game, and here it is, the ninth inning. And, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, it's another way to manufacture drama. You know.
I mean, I think that could happen. I see that happening pretty easily.
Well, we've got a few choices. We could be extremely pessimistic, somewhat optimistic, some blend of the two. But
well, I also know that, like, as a consumer of media, like, I'm annoyed that the things are on different places. And I'm a hardcore baseball fan. And even if I can, I do have Apple Plus. Yes, I don't have the pay version, but I have the app, right? And I do have this. But I'm annoyed, and maybe I'm just an old fogart, foggy fart. That's the word, fart. Fogey. Maybe I'm an old fart, fogey fart. But I will be annoyed at some point. I'm like, oh man, I got to change the input and then go to that bet. No, we're gonna add to, and I got to, oh, nope. Ah, it's not here. It's over there. I got to do this. Well, you know, it doesn't, we can't sign in on this TV. You got to go to the other TV.
Yeah.
I don't know if you, that's my life.
That's where, not a like, great, the kids want to watch something experience.
And I don't know which service it's on and which TV it works on and which not. And, you know, no, you guys can only watch that in the other room, but dad, I want to watch that on the big TV. Yes. Dad can only get Apple Plus working on this TV, and so he's going to watch the baseball game in here. Y'all have to go watch on the smaller TV. Sorry.
Yeah, there's some user experience wrinkles that could be smoothed out at some point. But
welcome to my household.
Nice 1 minute trip inside the Sarah's home. That's going to do it for this episode of the 3-0 Show. If you've got a question, drop it to the Rates and Barrels email, ratesandbarrels@theathletic.com. Happy to answer those on a future episode, or you could just drop a question in the comment section on this video. Our hope is that by the time you listen to this episode, that it is sort of irrelevant because a deal has been reached. Of course, we have no guarantee of that actually happening. On Twitter, you can find Eno at EnoSaris, find Britt at Britt_Giroli, find me at Derek Van Riper, and you can get $1 a month access to The Athletic for the first 6 months of a new subscription at theathletic.com/baseball show. It's the best deal we do all year. Get it while you can. That's going to do it for this episode of The Athletic Baseball Show. We are back with you on Monday.